Barclays are in the right. Bob Barclays. Mr. Barclays. Mr. Swagman, the Barclays. What are the Barclays?
They're all efficient for everyone.
Ah,
for,
okay.
Because they're not any.
New much. Yeah, Nirmatsaro?
Yeah,
Nirmatsaro. Yeah. It's like in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Nirmatsaranam. The beginning text is Nirmatsaranam. This is, the Srimad Bhagavatam is understandable to those who are not envious. Nirmatsaranam. Dhira Dhira. It's the gentle and the rough ones, right? Yeah. Jana, people. Priya? Yeah, yeah, yeah. And what does yugao mean? Vande rupa sanatana raghu yugao. Yeah, yugala kishore. It's a couple. Both raghus. Both raghus. Vande rupa sanatana raghu yugao. Raghunath das, Raghunath bata. Yeah. Huh? Yes, yeah. Oh, is that this? That's right.
That's good. In the middle,
yeah. Yes, I don't know. Available. Yeah. So I think in this song, but there's no word-by-word meaning. But in the other one, without the metal binding, there's a word-by-word meaning. Yeah. Again, it's a great, great meditation. It's this song. Probably put it right in front of the songbook. Like that. So any questions about, you know, yesterday's work? General description? I think we went over it kind of. I had, as far as the content, I was thinking it were like, what was it? A few areas. Yeah. Just the goals of the course, the goal of studying Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, different sources for studying it. And then Rupa Goswami, teaching Rupa Goswami, which I guess we'll do today. And then I was going to reverse these and try and today do Rupa Shiksha, and maybe if we can get to it, then the Paribhasa Sutra, and then the summary after that, and then go back to the eastern part of the ocean, you know, and then if we can go on to the western part of the southern part of the ocean, the Bhava Bhakti, and then the other part is there you go. Personal, I guess what? Utility. Yeah. Utility application. How we're all situated in different positions, how it's, you know, we can talk about our own development. Probably most of us in sadhana bhakti, even. Like that. So any comment, any question? I have some kind of ideas about how to go ahead.
So what are we going to do today?
Today we mentioned before then chapter 19, Rupa Shiksha, the instructions to Rupa Goswami. And then maybe if we have time, then we'll work on the Paribhasa Sutra, like that, which is in the text. Okay, how about you? Right. So did anybody get a chance to read or look at? Right? You did some? Any kind of any thoughts about the text? About the chapter 19 instructions? Anybody had any experiences? Any out of body experiences? Your hands left your body by 6 inches? No? No? Famous? From? Yeah, metro devotion. Yeah.
Because you mentioned that this instruction lays the basis for Rupa Goswami Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, and indeed Chaitanya Mahaprabhu speaks about that.
Yeah.
About 5 or 7 hours or so, then he just expands.
Yeah. In the, where is it? Where to go? I was trying to organize the course. I was thinking, well, maybe this is useful. I'll read this because maybe it was like, you know, the basis. And I read it. And then, one thing is big. It's like 257 verses or something like that. This is very big. And then after that, what comes after that? What's chapter 20? Chapter 21? Chapter 22? Yeah, instructions to Sanatana Goswami. These are called sometimes, again, Rupa Shiksha and Sanatana Shiksha. So you can take them like, this is individual meditation studies. Very good, you know, individual studies. But the Sanatana Goswami is more, even more detailed. So, the Lord instructs Rupa Goswami. It says here, Srila Rupa Goswami was instructed by the Lord, who gave him the basic principles of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Like that. So in the summary, Prabhupada then says that. This is the basis of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Mm-hmm. And so what I did, why do universities exist? This is a question there. Why do universities exist? And the answer is so teachers can learn. Yeah. So I gave classes on this so I could figure out like what the content was and stuff. We're in Peru. We did a series. We published it because in Spanish it's not available. The Chaitanya Charitamrita. It's available on the disc, but not this first Adi Lila. So we printed up this one chapter as a separate folio and had a sold these and had a class. And again, it was about 150 people, for 3 nights like that. Then I did it again in Santiago in Chile, and it was very nice, book distribution like that. And all the proceedings went to one devotee who had some cancer on his back, so he had an infection, had to have surgery, so it was like, the benefit, all the income from sale of books. So I have, I wrote a preface type thing here, and I have a summary. Anybody do an outline? Just outline of the text? That's nice, outlining the thing, because it's different topics. So I have from text number 132 is, I might say the history of the meeting of Lord Chaitanya Rupa Goswami. How Lord Chaitanya came to Prayag, Allahabad, like that. And how Rupa Goswami came there. One of the things we have to do for Lampeter is a history like that. And so there's already some historical facts there about Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu.
Do we have also some other sources for this historical data, or do we just draw from Chaitanya
Charitamrita? Maybe, again, 2,000 words isn't that much. Okay. But as far as I know, the David Haberman again, which maybe we'll do tomorrow, next day, his introduction, if we get the photocopies, he gives a historical background, I would say more of the literary, what he considers to be the literary circumstance like that. But I don't think so much the biography of their lives like that. But he gives a history of the literary situation, like this person was writing this, and then 100 years before, and then his follower was this person, he wrote this kind of thing, and that developed, and Rupa Goswami, then followed this tradition. Like that. And then I think Satyaraj's book, I think mostly is just, summary of Chaitanya Charitamrita. Satyaraj has, Lives of the Goswamis. OBL Kapoor is mentioned in the bibliography. So he may have some more things too. And Chaitanya Bhagavat, I don't think we have. So there's a background like that, historical background. And finally they met. And where did they meet? Prayag, but where? Dash Ashvamedha Ghats. What does that mean? Dash Ashvamedha. Ten something. What does Ashvamedha mean? They did ten horse sacrifices were performed there. And for how many days did he talk?
10 days.
Okay. So holding this 10, 10, 10. And I don't know how long the classes went on or what the program was or anything else like that. But after the whole thing, then Lord Chaitanya said, okay, you know, this is very common. There's, you know, instructions. Any questions? Okay, sometimes. Answer the questions. Okay, any more questions? Okay, no. Now you go and preach. This is so common with Narada Muni, with Sutta and the sages, again and again. After you've heard, okay, now you explain this to other people so they can also understand that. And what did Rupa Goswami say? Okay.
No.
Yeah? What did he say?
I don't
know
with you.
No. It's part of it. You know. Say, I can't do it. I'm incompetent. Like that. So unless you bless me to have it revealed within my heart. So it's like, you know, there with me. So he paid his obeisances and Lord Chaitanya put his foot on his head. Like that. God. So a very fortunate person to get Lord Chaitanya's foot on his head. That should give you enough shakti to do anything at that point. Like that. So this is a historical meeting. And then, according to our snappy thing here, 133 to 243 are the actual instructions. Instructions. There we go. Let me put a new language here. Okay. And the Chaitanya Charita is one quarter page per verse. I have this perverse habit. I'm always analyzing this. So it's about a quarter. Each verse gets about a quarter page. Sometimes you find it very intense, like two pages per verse. Okay. So how many verses? What? That's about 100? 110? About 110 verses. Like that, the actual instructions. And then those are broken down, according to my analysis, into page 136, verse 136 through 143. I have as... Jivas, this is about what? It's about seven verses. As what? See, this first describes the jiva as? Huh? Atoms. Yeah. That's where he starts. Like that. Yeah. So what is the size of the jiva? Huh? Yeah, or what? Or if, he actually gives the actual process for arriving at that. How do you do? What do you do? Huh? Yeah, cut the hair 100 times and then you do? 100 times. Okay. But now with an electron microscope you can see smaller than that. So we should be able to see the jivas, right? With electron microscopes? Yeah. Electron microscope you can see electrons. Supposedly that's the way it works. No? There are questions like that. Yeah. So does it actually mean that jiva actually has the material size and time and space? I don't know. It's a question. Yeah, you know? Or say a shukshma is just so fine. Because sometimes I know Prabhupada says, you know, that some of these things he says, this is just like an exaggeration or something, an analogy to show us that it's so small like that. But even materially speaking, you could say, well, what is the tip of a hair? I had an argument with him. It was friendly science. He was a devotee, kind of like that. You say, well, you know, that means that we should be able to see the jiva then, the electron microscope. And says, well, what is the tip of a hair? Is it the topmost protein molecule? Or is it the topmost atom and the topmost protein molecule? Or is it the topmost electron circulating around the topmost atom? Like that. So on. So you were defeated. But anyway, it describes it as being very, very small. Basically, you might say... Can't be perceived by direct perception like that. One time, Rasaraj Das, where Bhaktivedanta Institute was, actually was in London, when they were trying to get the money and the funding for the Bhaktivedanta, Center for Vaishnava and Hindu Studies. So they were talking to the Hindujas, who were the funders. It was Hindujas. They were funding the thing, thinking about funding a chair. And so our ISKCON devotees were there, and scholars, and Shunaka Rishi. And Rasaraj, it's from South India, and some British scholars, and they're talking all about the need for this and this and that, and then they were talking about the need to study the science within the Vedas. You know, so this British scholar said that there's no empirical evidence for a soul, in the Vedas, like that. And then Rasa Raja's comment was, well, there's no empirical evidence for the atom either, like that. Is that true? Yeah. Well, no, in Western science. Western science, is there any empirical evidence for the atom?
You mean that someone has
seen the atom? Yeah, the guy was shocked, actually, because, well, no, it's all the same thing. It's all by different references, different inference. This effect is there. And that's what we also say, that the soul is there, because different effects. You know, so the person was like, shocked. Fact, it's not an empirical entity, the atom. You know. So I said, it's a long discussion. He gives several quotations from different shastras, different scriptures, about the atomic size of the atom. And then we go to 144 to 150. This is written in Spanish. Jerarquía de los Divas. How you spell this? Hierarchy. Is that right? Divas. So he's describing the different kinds of states of consciousness, the jivas, right? You know, there's innumerable living entities in 8,400,000 different species of life, right? And how does he start? He starts off with what kind? No, lower than that.
Moving and
yeah, moving and non-moving. Stavara, danga, madeki. So very, very systematic. Okay, you know, some move and some don't move. You know? Thanks. What non-moving entities include? Non-moving.
Mountains.
Trees. Some mountains are alive. Yeah. Trees. Civil service employees. government employees. Yeah. And the moving ones like that, varieties. Yeah. Prabhupada was going from on the Radha Damodar bus, Tamal Krishnamurti's bus one time. He went from New York to Boston. And he was pointing out some of the hills that were alive and some weren't. He was pointing out.
Oh,
yeah. Because yeah. Some are inhabited, you know, some aren't. Like that. Ghost, kind of ghostly relationship. And if it's inhabited, then is integration. You know, different species grow and things grow because there's somebody there kind of like making it all work. You know, psychological relationship. So there's some in moving, some non-moving, some in crystals, you know, different places like that. Then out of the moving living entities, he divided into what? Yeah, I think civilized and uncivilized. Civilized and uncivilized. So what are some examples of uncivilized living entities? Yeah, malechas? Maybe, okay. Palindas? Malechas? What are malechas and yavanas translated as? Yeah. And also, Malechas also has his Greeks. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Alexander the Great was Malecha, and Yavanas as Turks. Yeah. Yeah. One Turkish devotee. Any Turkish devotees here? No? It is Jayadas. His father was a colonel. You know, and he said, it's the worst possible passport to have. Mm-hmm. The second you show that passport, you know, it's, yeah, come with us. And they go and go through all your clothes and everything else. So much drug association with it. It's every time, it's just show your passport. Come with a Turkish passport. So, also you get like what's the verse? The Naradama. You know, there's four kinds of Naradama, Maya, whatever that. But also you have like pygmies. You know, for example, in these civilized countries, tend to annihilate them. Actually, I was told one devotee was from New Zealand. When the Europeans came there, they actually formed a line across the country of people with their weapons, and they killed every single human form along this, annihilated them like that. The United States also, the tribal people in the Midwest, you know, the Indian tribal Indians, same thing, just annihilated them. You know. So it was this nasty habit amongst British, mentality. Spanish tend to integrate. In South America, they would integrate and then have a whole hierarchy in terms of children, depending on the parents. Whole like things written down. If your mother's like this, your father's like that, you're like this. It was like a whole integration like that. But the British system was more just annihilate people. Yeah. Everywhere. Yeah. And also in India, there's a very strict non-mixing program. And, any girl who was like wasn't you know, associated with somebody who was a whole fun to grab them and send them back to England, so there would be no like mixed, you know, children being produced. You know. But in the Philippines, for example, even now, there's many countries, you know, in Peru, like that, they're uncivilized people, you know, with an intelligence quotient very low, like moron or imbecile. These are different kinds of technical terms like that. You know, moron, imbecile. And for example, in Peru, in the mountains, many people, they're very low consciousness. When you make the cocaine, apparently, you take the stuff off that goes to Los Angeles and wherever, and, you know, Amsterdam, that stuff off. And what's left behind is called pasta básica, you know, fundamental paste or something like that. So these people, they take that. It's full of all kinds of impurities, contamination. When the girls get married, they have a dress, right? Then after that, every year they put a new dress on over that. They don't take the old one off. So after being married for 20 years, they have this thing like that, with the bottom ones decaying, you know. When winter comes in the Andes, they go barefoot. When the winter comes, they get mud on their feet and let it dry. And they leave it there until the spring comes. Like that. So they have porcelain shoes like that all winter like that. You know, never seen, never exposed. You know. So there are people living entities like that, uncivilized living entities. And in Philippine Islands, and they form tribes. They have like cockroaches have tribes. You know, they form animals. You know, baboons. You know, so they also, you can see it too. Also, it's kind of difficult where to draw the line. For example, when baboons, just two kinds of baboons. You know what they are? See, half your life is wasted. Hamadryas and Anubis. And the Anubis guys live in Egypt, and the Hamadryas guys live in the forest, where elephants live, in the savannah. So when they're traveling, they form a crescent with all the young macho males in front, like that, out there in front. They go on all fours usually, and about the head's about here, and the fangs are about that long, like that. And usually most monkeys have a compressive strength about six times of a human being. Six times as much strength like that. So, you know, these guys are out front, you know, ready to fight anybody. Then behind them are the women and children in this crescent. And in the center usually is about three or four older males. Older means like, you know, your prime, maybe 20, 25 is your physical prime, and 30, 40. So these older males are about 30 and 40 years old. And they aren't as strong as these younger guys. But the younger guys will never cooperate. Like, you know, it's so like, you know, egoistic. And these older guys will cooperate to beat up the younger guys. You know, so they're in control, because whenever the younger guys try and, you know, make some decisions, these older guys, you know, together, combine together and beat them up like that. So it's a very social arrangement, a very social hierarchy. Grooming, like when you see monkeys, they're always going through, like, there's a whole hierarchy about who can pick fleas off of who and stuff like that. So you can't make a line between primates and uncivilized human beings. It's just a flow. Warsha, one chimpanzee, the most intelligent usually, they trained her to a sign language like that. And so she could, you know, talk in sign language and stuff, you know. And then, for example, one day, you know, it's an ordinary day, she told her keeper, one lady, she said, "I'm sorry I bit you," not very hard, you know, "this morning I was angry about this or that, and please forgive me." So she could remember emotional states and feel like what was right and what is wrong and stuff like that. And then they had another chimpanzee, like she was about older, another young male, and she trained him how to use sign language like that so they could communicate. Like they would put bananas in his cell, his room, where he didn't know where they were, but she knew where they were. So she would, like, you know, had to communicate with him by sign language how to find the bananas and then negotiate about, you know, to divide them and stuff like that. So very sophisticated. I mean, oh, it's amazing to read this. Many stories go on and on. They're definitely human beings. They definitely have all sentiments and ideas. They make jokes, everything like that. Yeah.
So, like you mentioned, would they fall into category 400,000 human beings?
That's a big question about what the species are, but probably so. I would say that they're, you know, human species. Then in the Philippines, you have tribes of, what do you call these guys? just uncivilized guys, and they go around in tribes, and they have their customs and habits, and very low intelligence. And they don't have any houses, they just set up their kind of camp somehow or other, and cooking, and then they work with the plantation owners to do, you know, day labor, load stuff, unload stuff. And somebody, kind of yells at them and gets them to work and stuff. And they give them like some food and stuff to cook, whatever, you know. So very, very, low intelligence people like that. But we tend, again, in the modern industrial societies, we tend to annihilate these people. You know, if they even exist, you drive them out onto the street, and they're homeless, and they get involved in drugs, and they die. You know, but other cultures, they maintain and integrate them. More in tropical cultures, there's more warmer climate and stuff like that. But here, there's so much pressure. The middle class is in the cities. Got to work hard, otherwise, they're gone. So Lord Chaitanya is deciding what there's, moving and non-moving, there's civilized and uncivilized, and amongst the civilized, you find what? What makes them civilized? By what? Yeah, there's some kind of, sage, like Confucius. You know, very much in China for many, many years, the sayings and the philosophy of Confucius was like, the regulating factor for many people, like that. And then, Socrates, Plato, the different Greek scholars, So somehow or other, either it's like some kind of wisdom, or ultimately, just direct, knowledge coming down from Bhagavad Dharma. And so they're following these habits, but most of them, he says, are simply giving lip service. I'm a Buddhist, I'm a Christian, I'm a Hindu. Prabhupada says, nowadays, the Buddhas, he says, the essence of Buddha's philosophy is ahimsa. Which means? Nonviolence. Prabhupada says, we're totally in favor of Buddhism if they follow this. But he says, modern Buddhists eat everything in the ocean but the junk. The boat, right? Everything on the land but the rickshaw, and everything in the sky but the kite. There's no question about not mercy. They eat everything and kill everybody. And say they're Buddhists. And it's the same way, Christians. So those who are self-civilized, they formally say this and that. But that's all they're doing, not following. But then there's some who are following. But what are they? The majority, what are they? Most of them are, those who are following are? Karmis. They're following to get something. This is rare. So actually a karmi is a pretty elevated person. A real karmi. Mm-hmm. And out of the karmis, what? Mm-hmm. Yeah, very, that was a good pseudonym, Narayana Para, one verse he quotes, which is, Yeah. It's just mentioned a couple times. This is in Spanish. It's kind of important verse. Yeah. It's text number 150. Muktanam apisidanam narayana parayana sudurlabham prasantatma kotish api mahamune. O gran sabio de entre muchos millones de personas. O great sage, amongst many, many millions of people, liberated person, persons, and amongst many millions of siddhas, it's very, very, very difficult to find one pure devotee of Narayan. Only these devotees are actually satisfied and peaceful, like that. So that's the next level, is that there's, out of those who are following the principles of religion, some come to the idea of salvation, liberation, getting free from the material entanglement. Most people want some results. Yeah.
I have a question there. I was a little bit surprised that Sri Chaitanya said that the karmis are those who are after material results.
Benefits.
Benefits. And the yogis are after material opulences.
Yeah.
I would expect after saying that karmis are after material benefits, then jnanis are after liberation, then yogis would be something
higher,
and then I was a little bit surprised that it's material opulence.
But it seems that liberation will be higher than the mystical powers. I've also had this question for 25 years. I haven't found an answer yet. I guess it's a fact. Prabhupada says, you know, somehow or other, because, you know, the yogi's idea is they would have knowledge of God. You know, you know, sat chit. The jnanis will come to sat. You know, there is reality, we're immortal, this kind of thing. And then the yogis would come to the point of chit. You know, sat and chit. You can understand these things, and thereby they can tell the future, they can do so many things like that. You know. But actually they can perceive, you know, God, you know, divinity. So, but usually, you know, they get entangled, and they use it all for, you know, they use it all for material benefit. I don't think he mentions here, does he mention the hierarchy? He just kind of puts them together, you know, the jnanis, you know. And some get liberation. They're actually liberated from the material world, you know, like that. But out of those, out of siddhas and out of yogis, it's amazing. Out of all those, it's very rare to find, out of millions, he says millions, out of millions of siddhas, perfected yogis, and out of millions of, you know, liberated souls, right? I've heard that one Sunday feast, Prabhupada was talking. Sunday feast, he was saying, some of you were great yogis and yoginis in your last lives, and now you've come here, this movement. And some of you were great demigods and goddesses, and you've come to this movement. And some of you are just fortunate. kind of wander in like that. But you find devotees in this movement is really, being to know people, they're very rare, you know, very unusual people. You know. Actually, it's very, very surprising. You've got so many people that have no interest, you know, in Krishna consciousness. Actually, it's kind of shocking is how people are on different levels like that, you know, two-legged animals. You know. So, then some people, I think at this point then is where he starts to come, this point, we're liberated souls. And then the important verse, maybe the most important verse in the whole section is Brahmanda Brahmati Kong Bhagyavan Ji. Yeah. So I have two things. I have the outline. Usually what I do is I outline the text and I find important texts. So I have important texts and number 149, in case you put here somewhere. Important texts. 149. And that's about where we are right now. Krishna Bhakta Nishkama Atayeva Shanta Bhukti Mukti Siddhikami Sakala Ashanta. The Prabhupada quotes it many times. That only the devotees, because they have no desires, are they peaceful and happy. It's an important text. And another one is 151, and that's where we are now. This is such a, you know, important verse, you know, again and again. Brahmande Brahmate Konya Bhagyavan Jeev Guru Krishna Prasade Poye Bhakti Laravi. You know word by word? Brahmanda, what does Brahmanda mean? Brahmande Brahmite. Yeah, B is called Brahmara. Brahmanda Brahmate Konya, I don't know. Bhagyavan Jeev. Yeah. Guru Krishna Prasara. Eh? Bhakti Lata Bija. Paya. Sanamita Pau. This is a really important word in Bengali. You'll get. Yeah. You get that seed. So we're going through all this, you know, hierarchy of material bodies and karma. And some people become muktas. It's kind of like it's, you know, you can get the seed in any circumstance. The same examples there in the Bible also, right? Jesus Christ says, I'm, you know, tossing out seeds. But some fall on the stones and they just get burned up by the sun. Some fall on soil, but it's not very deep. So they grow for a little while and they die. And some are eaten by animals. So it's a very common analogy like that. So some people, yeah. Oh, wow, yeah.
Prabhupada types this Nitya Siddha Krishna Prema.
Yeah.
And then it mentions that this switch is already there in the heart.
Yeah.
And then in the verse mentions that this switch or this seed comes from the spiritual master.
Yeah.
So how to reconcile these two things? And because it seems to be a little bit contradictory.
Yeah.
Take these two verses.
Well, and with Nitya Siddha Krishna Prema Sadhya Kabunaya Shravanadi Shuri Chitya Harikara Jyadaya. So this, I would say this is actually the seed The seed of waking up is the seed we're talking about, bhakti lata bija. You know, our full character is already there. That's the idea. It's covered over. Our full relationship, our full name, it's like amnesia. We have name, form, associates. In the Brihat Bhagavatamrita, the devotee goes back and he's related to Krishna in this way and that way, and it's all there. You know, so that it's already there. And that, you might say, the seed form in that sense. So understand. But what we're getting is the seed of waking up, like that. One devotee, Bhakta Paul Ignosa. He was in New York when Prabhupada was first coming there. He was walking around. You know, he was a cool guy. He was involved in the whole theater scene. But basically, ethical, moral guy. He wasn't getting involved in degraded things. But he was into the whole theater scene in New York, you know, and acting and this kind of stuff. And so he heard about A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami and the Hare Krishnas. And then he was walking down the street one time, and he heard this kirtan. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. And around the corner came this devotees, you know, and bed sheets, pink bed sheets. And then in front of them was this old Indian man walking like that. You know. Said, oh, it's A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami and his father. You know. So he said, Prabhupada was walking by him. Prabhupada looked at him, and he looked at Prabhupada, and Prabhupada looked at him, and that was the bija. It just took exchange of two glances. And for 20 years, that was always like, you know, this, that, this, that, this, that. You know, and that was always the light on the top of the hill that kept his reference about everything. So he said, when Prabhupada looked at him, he could just immediately see this person had nothing to gain from me. He's a very profound person, satisfied. So he kind of like just opened up in his consciousness. And then Prabhupada kind of, you know, which meant, you're not happy, and you should join us. So he responded, his nod, which meant, it's a fact. It's a fact. But I still have a few options. Then Prabhupada responded. There's always an exchange of different kind of nods and stuff like that. You know, and then Prabhupada responded, okay, try them, but if they don't work, we're here. Like that. So it was a moment, you know, love and matra, just a couple of exchanges of glances like that. You know, so he got the seed, right? You know, there is a reality. These things are there, like that. And then that was again how to relate these two to the eternal circumstance and the seed we get from the spiritual master. It may be that if he didn't take advantage of that in this lifetime, he may have lost it. You know, that experience. You know. Maybe only the seed only reached the of waking up. That's what I would understand. Yeah.
The next verse in 152, Prabhupada says what constitutes the seed.
Yeah.
So here's the method, rules, and regulations by which one is protected, trained, and devotes in service constitutes the bhakti lata bija for seed. The methods, rules, and regulations by which one is protected, trained, and devotes in service constitutes the bhakti lata bija for seed of devotion service.
Yeah. So he gives us the techniques by which we can wake up. But also, it's also the association with a pure devotee, just a momentary experience that yes, there is a Krishna, yes, you know, that faith, the beginning of the faith, the Adho Shraddha, like that.
This point is related, and later on he says that unmarkable
that the devotee should become a bhajana. Yeah, let's go ahead, let's take one step at a time. Then.
By taking the process on can be a
garden,
by not applying the process,
the
seed will be dry up. From understanding, it's mainly the process.
Yeah.
So
that yeah. Yeah. But also, again, you can give the whole process, but if you have no faith in it, you know, what's the use? You know? So you have to have that association, Adho Shraddha. By contact with a devotee or a Krishna, you know, published 10. Okay, process is there. But then you see, oh, wow. And the whole experience is there, the goal and the means like that. Yeah. So anyway, that's what I would say. The biggest thing, before when I gave this course, before I read the whole thing again and studying it like that, the whole thing is a big, big chapter. You know, gradually meditate on the chapter. Nobody can take everything the spiritual master is offering. When I heard that, it gave me a lot of relief. You know, trying to, everything Prabhupada ever wrote and everything else, and my mind, is just, no, it's impossible. So you have to, you know, become Uttamadhikara, you have to develop your own logical, right? You know, your references from Shastra and your logic. You know. Logic means logos, that which goes in between. Biologi, geologi, right? Ecologi. It allows us to connect up with the earth, to connect up with life, to connect up with mind. Jesus Christ is the logos. Logos. In English we say, in the beginning was the Word was God and became man. In Spanish they say verb. Okay. But in Greek it's logos. Understand? In the beginning was the logos. The logos was with God, was God, and became man. So it's clearly identifying he's not a, you know, like an individual person, he's a principle. That's Balaram, guru, and logos. Okay. So we have to, you know, develop our logic, right? You know, put it all together, make our little boat, and then go across the ocean of nescience to the other side to Goloka. And somewhere in the ocean of nescience, Godzilla is waiting for us. We'll try and drown our boat. So it has to be, you know, big, small, whatever. We have to understand our logic has to be perfect. Right? And then based upon certain scriptural, you know, basis like that. And that's it. That's Uttamadhikara. Yeah. Experience this. So the bija is there. This is our development. Now we're kind of like going off of like material development into the transcendental development, right? Because now we got the bija of devotional service. All the rest of this stuff is kind of running around the material world, moving, non-moving, civilized, uncivilized, until finally, somehow or other, and especially in a liberated condition, other people can get this thing. But you know, if you're a liberated person, it's much better. Like Sukadeva Goswami. Four Kumaras, they're all liberated souls when they got their bija. You know, in physics, if you have a totally pure water, totally pure water, distilled water in a fish tank like this, right? You can take it down below freezing, you know, and it won't freeze because it's so pure. Yeah, it's called a supercooled liquid. But then you take a little crystal, a little seed or something like that, and just drop it in there. It'll go down like that. And you can see, you know, forming a trail of crystals behind it because it's just so ready. And it's very beautiful, though. And the whole thing becomes ice, like this, like that. Well, you know, science. You know. So it's like that. A liberated soul, a mukta. He's super cool. If he's not envious of Krishna. Brahma Mayavadis are envious of Krishna. They know they're liberated, and they don't want to know God. You see, Brahmavadis are liberated. They just don't know. They're innocent. They haven't come in contact. They haven't had that experience. What was the bija for Sukadeva Goswami? What convinced him about the reality of a spiritual life and gave him the impetus to pursue it? Srimad Bhagavatam. Yeah. And the four Kumaras? Yeah, they went to see Vishnu, who's a respectable person, so they paid their obeisances, and they, you know, the smell of tulsi from his lotus feet like that. And they could tell this is not material. Yeah? Yeah. I got the Krishna book. It's a whole story, you know, at the University of California, I was reading it. Yeah. And yeah, I was reading it, I was trying to do yoga, I was reading different books and trying to control my mind. I think I was vegetarian by then, you know, pretty much. And so I was reading the Krishna book. Then at some point, then Krishna cut off all the hands and legs of Jarasandha's troops, and the heads became like tortoises, and the jewels became like pebbles. Then Balaram came out and started killing more people, and there was ocean of blood overflooded, and it was like, you know, and just by hearing about the story of Sudama Vipra, you'll become more opulent than the king of heaven. And then at some point, my mind, you know, said, hey, this is either, you know, the biggest lie anybody ever told, or it's the absolute truth, you know. Then my mind was like that. The next thing my mind said, well, either it's the absolute truth, or an absolute lie. But either case, it's absolute. And it was like, wow, it's fact. Because nobody even lies like this. You know, it's like, I read, you know, the best science fiction in the world. It was, you know, nothing compared to this, you know. And then, so then my mind, then I was like, it's a fact, you know. Because there was nothing in the mode of goodness to appreciate that this is a fact. So I realized that what I had was absolute, you know. So I started reading it, you know, with more focus, more intensity, more motivation, like that, you know. So also, too, I would say, isn't it just get one bija? You know, it's like so many experiences, so many times to wake you up and, you know, and do something like that, you know, something just to motivate you, to get you going, and then cultivating. And then specifically the time of initiation is the point then. So then actually, the next what happened is we're describing then the creeper, right? He's describing then how it grows like that for different levels. And he doesn't talk about the details about diksha and things like that, as I remember, you know. But he's describing how it was, so the basic elements. So what is the watering? Watering process is what? Yeah, hearing and chanting. So no problem. You just go on hearing and chanting, and the creeper goes back to Godhead, right?
No.
No? Oh, I remember that. Oh, okay, yeah, it's to fit in with the thing. Yeah, yeah. So they're weeds. Actually, they're two things, right? They're weeds and... Yeah, the mad elephant. Yeah, there's a fences, and there's weeds. Yeah. So I think the mad elephant fences first. And that can, you know, see, because the example, that can just crush the creeper and destroy it, like that. So what is the mad elephant offense? Yeah, Vaishnava aparad, and especially to the acharya. And it's interesting. What does Prabhupada describe as Vaishnava aparad? Acharya aparad. What does he describe there? It's a little surprising. Yeah, not even just to follow his instructions, right? You know, spiritual master is coming and telling you do this. He's so kind, you know. And if you just don't even follow those, that's offensive. What to speak of actually doing something offensive, you know, like that. No, just to not follow his instructions is offensive, like that. Yeah. So there's a hierarchy. Some are more important than others. You know. And so how do we protect? How do we protect ourselves? The creeper. Yeah, the neophyte devotee has to be surround himself, you know, by pure devotees. Say also then by following the rules and regulations like that, which is secondary. There's two things: there's association and the rules and regulations. And of those two, the association is, you know, more prominent. Of course, they're connected. I mean, association means to execute devotional service, sadhana bhakti, and association of devotees. So therefore, it's very important for a neophyte devotee to get good association, to keep himself in good association like that. Be conscious. Otherwise, he becomes offensive about so many things. You know, he's irritated by this and that, and there's no sense gratification this way and that way. He becomes irritated. I remember, for example, when I was doing the temple in San Francisco, it was a very difficult situation. It was like, you know, all these Western devotees joining, and, you know, temple president didn't know much more than anybody else. So he was kind of more vicious than other people. So he became a temple president. He was like, you know, stronger, you know. Somebody said you had to be, when it was a Mataji, said temple president had to be handsome to control the women and mean to control the brahmacharis, like that, you know. Biggest gorilla in the ashram, like that, you know. But it was like that in many ways. It was this very, you know, gross environment. I remember one time John Baban, the head pujari, was angry about something, so before he went on the altar, he punched a hole in the wall, you know, and he went on the altar, you know. Like that. Very difficult. That was 455 Valencia Street. It used to be a mortuary before we took it over and moved in there. Yeah. And where we used to cut the subji up next to the kitchen, there was the floor kind of went down like this to the drain. And that was where they used to embalm the bodies, and the blood would drain down through there. Yeah. And sure enough, you know, I once one Sunday, before like Janmashtami or something, or devotees were working down the temple room, like four or five devotees, the president, like late at night, decorating. And since some devotees were up cooking, and they came down, and they said, "Wow, this is really strange. There's like ghosts up there, you know." And then the president said, "Come on, we can go. There's no ghost, you know." And then out in the lobby, they heard this, like, you know, and there's nobody there, and the door slammed like that. He said, "Well, they're going to take a rest now." There's always ghosts running around the place, like that. Odd, you know, waking up. Like. And then the women were in the basement, like that, with the rats, you know. And then we're up in the second story with no windows, like that. So it's like, take your choice, you know. So the second story had no windows. And it was a really heavy, you know, it was at Roxy's Burlesque Theater. It was like on the corner like that. It was always a horrible area, you know. So every Saturday night, there'd be like, you know, people beating each other up out front of the temple over this and that and stuff. You know, watch them, you know. It's a really heavy area. Yeah. I get this topic. Yeah. Oh, yeah. The bija. So, you know, yeah. So so a lot of, you know, because they'd be so accustomed to illicit sex, intoxication, gambling, and meat eating. I mean, you don't have these things, and what to speak of that, even like, you know, a decent bed and, you know, warm water. And the brahmachari shower was in the garage. The garage was next door. It was so big that two buses could go inside. It was a big industrial garage. And, the floor with, like, nails and this old thing. And Rocky Otter carts stored here, and people sleeping in these strange places. You never saw them, you know. And then, so the brahmachari, the shower was like on a platform somewhere or other, about like this tall. And, you know, these metal things you buy. So I came there for my first weekend in the temple like that. It wasn't like a weekend in Radhadesh. I was standing in line like at 3 o'clock, and everybody was just waiting. And they would go up one at a time, go inside, turn the cold water on and scream, "Aham Brahmasmi," like that, and come down again. It was like the guillotine or something, like, you know, French guillotine. It was just, they walk up and, you know, come down again. Like that, you know. So I was waiting in line, you know, like that. You know. So anyway, so you become frustrated, and that leads to anger, and you commit offenses to devotees. You know. So, you know, what made it work, basically, was Jayananda. You know. He was always there, and, you know, his consciousness was like the lowest level. And not bad, I mean, in the sense that he was like always thinking of himself as being like in the most difficult situation, the weakest, and so he always, everybody related to him, you know, like that. But when Bhakta Leroy, he joined the temple and been a devotee for like, you know, 3 weeks, and was doing sankirtan and collecting well and distributing books and everything else, you know. So we were in the garage one time in the Spiritual Sky office, you know. And then Jayananda said, you know, Bhakta Leroy, I've been a devotee for 7 years, and you've only been here 3 weeks, and you're already so much more advanced than I am. What's your secret? How do you do it? Like that. So Bhakta Leroy's ego, you know, like that. Because Jayananda actually meant it. He wasn't like joking or something. He actually meant it like that. And so, like, you could see, like, oh my God, you know, I'm so puffed up after 3 weeks, you know, like that. One time after Mangalarti, he used to pass out the Mangalarti to Sodom a little bit. And so one time I was next to Jayananda, and so sweet rice fell from somebody's hand on the floor. And he would always be the first person to do any kind of service. Like, you know, if we're all taking breakfast and the door rings, nobody wants to stop eating to go answer the door, he'd be, "I'll do it." You know, and he'd always like be the first person to take up any kind of, like, you know, undesirable service. So we were both were like going to go down and wipe up the sweet rice, you know. It was very intense. It was a very quick, intense moment. So my mind said, "Okay, I'm going to do this faster than Jayananda. I'm going to be more humble than Jayananda." You know. So we both kind of were going down faster. And because of a little pressure, then my mind became, my mind kind of reacted like, "Hey, what are you doing? Why are you forcing me to do this? You know, be humble." So I could see my humility was mostly based upon pride, right? You know, right? Yeah. That I was too. I'm probably humble, and I could really see my mind, just, you know, like that. But also, and he got there first, and he said, "Oh, this kind of work is too degraded for a person like you, Hanuman. You know, low class guy like me should do this." He said something like that. But again, I could see that he meant it. You know, in that intense situation, I could see that actually that was my mind was just becoming angry right away. You know, and his was like, no, he really felt that way. It was like this hole opening up in the floor with no bottom. I could see, you know, the depth of his humility was like, ooh, I don't want to see that again. So many, many people. Actually, Tamal Krishna Maharaj or Satsrup Maharaj, one of them said, if there's anybody in this movement who is an eternal associate of Prabhupada, it's probably Jayananda. And he left right before Prabhupada left. You know, like that. It's interesting, too. Because, you know, his disappearance day is celebrated right before Nrisimhadev's, the day before Nrisimhadev's. Like Prahlad Maharaj. They asked Prabhupada, is it true that some of the people in this movement came from the spiritual world? And Prabhupada said, if you knew who some of the people in this movement were, you'd be surprised. So I don't know, kind of humble like Prahlad Maharaj. Maybe we're dealing with Prahlad Maharaj, don't know it. But he was there, and actually, practically speaking, everybody, him, president, everybody else said, if he wasn't there, it'd be like, you know, 10 times tougher to carry on like that. So being associated, surrounded by pure devotees, you know, then we can avoid, you know, making offenses like that. And so it's a science. At some point, you see you're in a situation where it's just too difficult. There's no good association. You're becoming offensive. So you try and find some other situation. Try and get some association. And there's several times in my career in Krishna consciousness, I've made certain decisions about it. I just can't do this. The authorities will say, you've got to do this and that. And it's, you know, polite and everything else. It's just too dangerous. And then they say, well, okay. You know, I can say, okay. You know, we'll make an adjustment. So you have to protect your creeper, right? And association doesn't mean physical association. It can also be just you're doing the same project. You know, you're just working on the same project, you're in different countries, but, you know, our goal is the same, our motivation is the same. Get telephone calls, letters. Yeah? Okay, we got past the mad elephant. Now, what else is there? Yeah, creepers growing, you escape the mad elephant. What else? The second one? Second problem? Weeds. Yeah. Weeds. Yeah. So what are some of the weeds? Huh? Diplomatic behavior. Huh? Yeah. Cruelty to other living entities. Yeah. Desire for fame. Yeah. Who's an example of a devotee? Nice person. In the Bhagavatam, there's a very nice example of somebody who was a great sacrificer, but he had some pride. Yeah, Daksha. All these examples. Hansaduda told us that Prabhupada told him that every single psychological circumstance you can encounter is in Srimad Bhagavatam. So you study these stories and you see, yeah, Daksha. How many times have we seen Daksha in ISKCON? You know, great, good person, you know, honest, and doing big sankirtan devotee, you know, collecting lots of money, expert at something, but you know, some pride in his service. You know, so you're doing devotional service, you're engaging, hearing, and chanting, but you want fame. People should recognize me, right? You know, Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, if you can do your service your whole life and not don't care if anybody notices you, yeah, that's self-realization. Yeah, let's do your service. Fame, what else? Mystical powers. You know, be able to do different, you know, stop people in the street, collect money, you know, so many things. Peace. How many people join this ISKCON because they want peace? And what do they discover? Yeah, it's not peace. You know, go to Vrindavan because you want peace. You know, no, there's no peace in Vrindavan. You know, in that sense. Is, you know, devotional service is peace, but it's kind of like a dead body type mukti. You know. Material opulence. You know. Hansa Duda said, one of my connections, nobody ever starved to death in the Hare Krishna temple. You die of diabetes in the Hare Krishna temple. Yeah. So there's so much, you know, if you join this movement, even, one of our catastrophes was mother's parties. And that's the history of ISKCON. At one point we had these sankirtan parties, mother's parties. Remember those? Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Right? You were in San Francisco. Okay. I thought your name was trying to connect. Okay. I told the story of Jiva a little bit here. Well, he was with a whole program like that with several ladies and one man. And then, you know, all these things were happening, all these adventure stories like that. And so at one point there was this thing that he was peeling off $400 a day off the collection for personal expense money. Like that. Yeah, yeah. So when Sarabhi Swami came with Hansa Duda then to become our next catastrophe, which is our zonal guru, right? After Prabhupada left, it became zonal gurus. You know, we went from mother's parties to zonal gurus. We never did that again. So and then Sarabhi came. He had this, you know, fantastic opulence in terms of sense gratification. One devotee initiated in the same letter like that. Very nice person, but it was very heavy karma. Huh? Yeah, not him. Jiva was the person in charge of the mother Sangodam party. And so Swami was commenting, he said, even the most, you know, opulent karmi doesn't dream of a situation like this, you know, in terms of sense gratification. Like Indra, you know, you can get such sense gratification in ISKCON. You know. Jayananda said, ISKCON means, he told the brahmacharis, ISKCON means eating and sleeping in the best of company. Right? Eat prasadam and sleep in the brahmacharya ashram. You have no problems. The ladies got ladies ashram. Yeah. But it is, so, you know, so all these things are weeds. And your hearing and chanting actually increases them. The more you chant your rounds, it increases these desires. Yeah. So he says from the very beginning, you've got to identify them and take them out. Yeah. Because after a while, they get bigger. Yeah. And then, you know, being like temple president or being some, you know, zonal regional secretary and having this opulence and ability, that becomes your devotional service. That becomes your devotional life. And at that point, it's very difficult to, you know, to get rid of it. Because that is your whole identification amongst the devotees, your self-identification. And when that goes, there's no reason, you know, to be a devotee. Yeah? So I said from the very beginning, keep looking for these things and keep taking them out. You know? Like that. Yeah? Yeah.
So it's always, I feel like I can never cultivate humility.
Jayananda one time, I'm going to say humility personified. Say Tamal Krishna Maharaj is incarnation of Maharaj Prithu, administration personified. You know, but Jayananda was like an incarnation of Prahlad Maharaj. You know, humility. But he said that humility doesn't mean taking an artificially small position. Humility means understanding what your position is and acting according to that. You know. And so you're not nothing. Yeah. But also we aren't, you know, what we try and be, you know, normally, you know, in material life. You know. So we understand, it's very practical. What is my position, my ability, my nature? And then, okay, that's who I am. Yeah. No, because you know, I'm so great, I'm so great. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, today I'm going to meet so many people and there should be so many books this way and that way and I come back, everybody will be throwing flowers at my feet and, you know. Yeah. Yeah. The spiritual master likes to give the bhakti lata bija, but he can also give the karma lata bija, you know, the seed of material success. But he doesn't want to give it. You know, but if you keep pushing him long enough, he'll do it. Like that. There's so many stories from Prabhupada's secretaries where somebody would come and say, Prabhupada, I wanna leave India and go back to Europe and open a jewelry business and make a lot of money and make donations to the temple. And Prabhupada would say, well, I don't think it is a good idea. You know. Well, but Prabhupada, I really want to do it and the temples there could use money and this and that. Well, I don't know how to think it is a good idea. But Prabhupada, I really want to do this. Okay, do it, you know. And the secretaries would ask, well, Prabhupada, did you want him to do that? And I would say, no, of course not. Well, why did you let him? Because he would have become angry with me, and that would have been the destroyed his spiritual life. You know? So if we push the spiritual master long enough, then he'll tell us how to become, you know, he'll give us some impetus, some strength, some motivation to, you know, become materially successful. You know? And then, you know, sometime we do it and you know, come back. So the Bhagavatam is full of all these explanations. But it's giving a summary. And because Swami is adjudicating in terms of the scriptures, especially Srimad Bhagavatam.
Would be a kind of karma yoga?
Huh?
Would be a kind of karma yoga?
Well,
aiming at some success and at the same time trying to connect it with.
Well, if a devotee wants that, but usually what happens is that you make a donation, and then after that you say, well, I'll wait until there's more income, because right now there's not enough income, and then you never ends up, you know, you start smoking a little bit because you have so much anxiety, and that, you know, it's exactly what happens, you know, and then this and that, and, you know, and then you know, my experience, I only know two cases where devotees fell down from the desire to serve Prabhupada and Krishna. You know, and that was amazing. One case, it was a systematic effort over several years to actually eliminate that feeling. You know. But everybody else, even though they're smoking and everything else, they still desire was there. You know. So it's kind of like once you become at least initiated devotees, once you become Madhyama Adhikari, it says you very seldom fall down. But I would say you have moral fall down, but you don't fall down from this desire to be a devotee. And maybe again, it's very common, after years of being grihastha, grihamedi, then, like you say, you experience it all, and then you come back in vanaprastha stage, like the prachetas. Yeah. But karma yoga means to sacrifice the results of your activities, you know, for Krishna. So if someone's doing that, yeah, and that's not so bad. I mean, it probably would encourage that. It is encouraging. Most of us are engaged in karma mishra. You know, bhakti, doing what we like to do for Krishna. Yeah. So the more details of the creeper and how it grows in different ways. But now, okay, we're past the weeds, we're past the mad elephant. Now it's growing. Okay, where are we now? 162. Okay, why is it now? Higher to the dealer. So. I have 151 to 162 is the creeper. Okay. And it grows and grows and grows. And then 163 to 176 is then prema bhakti. And I have it more as a definition of prema bhakti. Yeah. This is the fruit, right? It's growing and it takes shelter at the lotus feet of Krishna outside the material world. And even though the devotee is in the material world, he's still, his creeper is at the lotus feet of Krishna, producing different fruits of love of God. And then again, you find so many verses that Prabhupada's quoting. You know, Prabhupada's quoting so many verses from Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. And he's mentioning, this is already explained earlier in Chaitanya Charitamrita verse so-and-so, this is explained earlier in verse so-and-so. So it's a very detailed, you know, explanation. Lord Chaitanya gives a summary of Sneha and, you know, different kinds of Bhava, Mahabhava. He gives a summary of the different levels of prema. Like that. Yeah. So, is that it? Yeah. Okay, so that's about chapters.
You talked about watching out for the riches
and mockery. Watching out for?
The riches and
mockery. Well, they're all, yeah, that's weeds, right?
No, watching out for the automatic.
Could be. Oh, really? Okay, could be. Yeah, this is the. I mean, even my outline, I have like a correction on it like that. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Because this, well, I have in that section why I did that, because it says that as long as one is infected by these desires for mukti and bhukti, then prema will never develop. So I have a section is called Definition of Prema Bhakti. You know? And the definition comes by then contrasting it with, you know, other things. That's why. I put it there. From one, no, from one, huh? To 243. Oh, okay, yeah, sorry, this is the definition of prema. Hey, right, so, okay. But when I had 177, I changed it. Okay. Then 177 to, this is definition, okay. And it's like about 14 verses. Then 177 to 234 are types of prema that I have there. Okay. Yeah, because the first part, that's where it is, the bhukti and the mukti are here. 163 to 177. Yeah. Yeah. And then it goes into describing the different states and how it kind of gives a nice example about the different states. He gives one analogy. The different states of development of prema are compared to sugar candy. How it becomes thicker and thicker like that, different stages, different flavors. Yeah. Every year in India, they're harvesting the sugar cane. And they have this, outside, maybe like an outside machine, like some diesel machine going, and they're running it through. And they have big, pans where they're boiling it, and they're taking off the impurities and throwing it aside. And all these dogs come. So many street dogs in India, And they're coming and licking up all these impurities. And they become totally intoxicated. And literally, they'll lean on each other and start singing. Like that. Five or six dogs leaning on each other. It's a whole village fun. So probably was trying to translate one time where this is happening. He asked him to move to the impurity pile someplace else because the dogs were all sitting there singing outside of the door like that. I got important verses. I have 149, which is Krishna Bhakta Nice Karma Kama. And 151, Ramandi Brahmati Kom Bhagavanji. 167, which is right in the middle of the definition of pure devotional service, and that is Nectar of Devotion 1.1.11, Anyabhilasita Shunyam. And a couple of verses later, 170, is Nectar of Devotion 1.1.12. No? It's in the very beginning. 1.1.11 is the definition of Anyabhilasita Shunyam. 1.1.12 is Sarvapadi Vimir Muktam Tat Parat Vena Nirmalam Rishikesha Rishikena Sevana Vak. That's the verses I have that are important. And again, this makes a very, very nice, lecture program. Over a couple of days, 1 day, 2 days. I always find that whenever you give like a organized, intelligent program, people come. They like to learn something. And it's also very easy to remember this. It's a nice analogy, nice description of the creeper growing and different civilized living beings at different levels and stuff. And it's very understandable. Yeah, it's like that. There's civilized people, uncivilized people. Yeah, some people say they're Christians. They don't do it. Most people are Christians because they want to go to heaven or they want this or that. It's a very nice organization like that. And in the Prema Bhakti section as well, it's just kind of like, incomprehensible in some ways for me. Try to appreciate the different levels, intensities like that. Any questions? Comments? It satisfies a lot of the... tomorrow I'll try and make up just the exact description of what we're supposed to write for the essay, for the paper. In general, we're supposed to write about what? The theology of Rupa Goswami with particular reference to Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. But it also asks for some historical things, different topics, historical topics, compares with other religions, a few things. And so there's about four points, I think, or something, 5 points we're supposed to cover, like that. And a lot of these, I think, are here. A lot of the history and, the comparison of different theologies, like that. Yeah. So we can stop for a little bit then, right? Just like for 5, 10, 15 minutes or something like that. Yeah. 10 minutes? 15. All right. And then, I guess we can maybe, we can maybe do 1.1.11. Yeah? 30 minutes. 1.1.11. Yeah. We finish it off with that. Okay. Yeah. Okay. advantage. Yeah. No, all it is just the preface has the what I gave you, and other than that, all it is it's a print of the text in Spanish. Nothing special. Mukti. Yeah. Your name was familiar to me. I know, yeah, I remember, you know, the Jeebus party and everything else. Your name is...
Luckily, he kicked me
off.
There was only two girls that, like, we didn't get actually very involved with him.
Yeah.
And I saw her Sudharma.
Yeah. She said no, and the thing is, he told me one time,
the next time I got Maya, he wasn't just going to beat me up, he was going to knock me out.
Oh, okay.
I didn't like the idea of myself kind of being static on the floor.
Yeah.
So then I got Maya, of course,
yeah.
2 days later.
Yeah.
And so I phoned the temple and I said, I'm not coming back.
Yeah.
And then I said, just wanted to let you know that I'm not coming back.
Oh.
Somehow they leaked out. I turned out to be the temple. He's still beating you girls. The whole thing stopped that long time.
Wow.
Anyway,
I was a treasurer.
Oh, in a birthday at that time?
Yeah.
We didn't have any access to anybody. We weren't allowed to look at anybody else.
Were you in the house next to the temple then?
No,
or
we
down,
didn't
down the street before?
And we weren't allowed to talk to anybody else.
Yeah.
We were
like, they're all in Maya. In the temple. Nityarupa would come back with a pistol under her sari with these big boxes full of money, you know, traveling and everything else. There was a whole, again, we didn't know what's going on, like, it was just new devotees and stuff, and then Charu was like, you know, kind of like also intoxicated with all the situation. And supporting the whole thing like that, and Jiva was an expert, you know, thief, in that sense, con man, you know, he was expert from materially speaking like that. We joined the Sacramento together. You know, in the very beginning. Jiva, Maharaj Dasa, four devotees, and they all came. You know, and he was in prison before. One time, he pulled into a gas station, and he was with a friend, and they got off the freeway, and he pulled a shotgun out and told the guy, the gas station guy, to give him all the money. Just at that moment, a highway patrol car pulled in with two highway patrol officers in it. So he looked at him. He tossed his shotgun to the guy and said, "Ah, just joking." Hit him on the shoulders, and the guy started laughing. "Oh, gosh, you really scared me, Mister." And, you know, and the police were looking at it and thinking, "Oh, it must be friends, must know each other." And they pulled away. He took the shotgun back and robbed the guy. Yeah, but that's the kind. You know, he was like.
This is during while he was
a devotee? No, before he was a devotee. And finally he was in prison for armed robbery and everything else like that. You know? So he had, like, you know, I can see how Charu would have been. He could have also, you know, confused Charu about the whole thing. And Hansa Duda came, and then it was like a whole...
Well, by the time Hansa Duda came,
I was
in Seattle.
Oh, with Udamanya?
Huh?
With Udamanya?
No, in Seattle, that was
for
Rochon.
Okay, I guess Udamanya had left.
Udamanya, I think he was in
Portland?
San Diego.
By then, okay, yeah.
But anyway, so, but I remember one time I had to get some teeth pulled, and we were always in traveling session.
Wow.
There was no one to stay long enough.
Yeah.
Anyway, what happened was when I came back to San Francisco, they gave me some codeine because I was in so much pain.
Yeah.
And they told me to go back and get more.
Oh, yeah.
But I was so out of touch with what was going on.
Yeah.
It really kept me
actually. Yeah.
So I didn't know that he was using
the codeine. Yeah, he was really involved in a lot of stuff. He was extremely passionate.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was actually very, very, many ways, very nice person, good hearted.
Everything seemed to be good.
Yeah.
Like having so many women around and so much money, which wasn't what he needed.
No. No. Yeah. Really, really involved. Yeah. In the Hansa Duda program was there. I joined initially in 1974 when we were in San Francisco, Valencia Street. We moved to Berkeley, and I was there the whole time. I basically still associated, like, you know, with the temple there a little bit. Mostly we have a new temple in San Jose. Yes, I've been down there, that area, because always Brook is always so much politics amongst the devotees. Yeah, it's just a big zonal center, and so it's not bad even. It's just that different people want to show they can do it better than somebody else, and so things. We're down in Santa Cruz and San Jose and trying to develop some programs. Mm-hmm. And Vaisheshika, he's taken that as his temple to develop book distribution in North America. And, you know, most of our members in North America are Indians, you know, like that. So he's really got into, like, well, how can they distribute books? So once a month, you have a Friday night, you know, Harinam Marathon, Chaitkirtan. And Saturday, everybody goes out on book tables or door-to-door. And, you know, the Indians, they're used to being social, you know, afraid of knocking on doors, kind of. And so they go, like, you know, husband and wife, kids, door-to-door. And it's like, you know, it has a certain potency. It's like, you can't say, well, you belong to a cult, you know. It's like, my grandmother did, you know. Yeah. You know, just like, no, just like they, and they're very friendly and stuff. And so he's developing that, and now it's developing a very practical way like that in terms of book distribution. Yeah, it's more like kind of like I was saying, when Prabhupada was there, it was a very unusual time, very unusual circumstance, with so many young people like breaking away, you know. And so what he's doing is more. He's encouraging also like Brahmachari traveling programs too, but. You know, when the temple is working, like how many things. They have like a smart box, which they just put the books in a... Yeah, it's already a cardboard box. You put it there and people put the money in. And it's, you know, someplace. And then it works. People take books and money. Yeah. 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 Do Gayatri Mantra. Good time. Gayatri Mantra. Yeah. Here's the other one. Oh. Here's the cortical.
How do you help the
tree? Yeah. Not full of bullet holes in the Sacramento River. Yeah. Okay. We're out here.
How to start the record.